what you were saying, that you were the oldest.
Oldest of six, five girls, one boy. We are almost between 2.5 to 3 years older than each other, except for my brother, my middle brother and sister. They're about 11 months apart. They were very close. I say were because he died early. He died in his 20s. And they were both in it. They were, like I said, 11 months apart. So they were almost like twins. They went everywhere. They did everything together.
Mm-hmm.
And as a consequence, she was like a tomboy. She's really outdoorsy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very close to my baby sister. She died early, but not as early as he. But the impact that his death had on my baby sister was deep because she kind of confided in him for things. And
mm-hmm.
when he was gone, then that part of her life kind of spiraled. And I think that was her the beginning of her drug use.
Mm-hmm.
But all that said, we all went to Catholic schools until my mother died. I was able to go to Catholic elementary high school, and I was about to finish college, and she died when I was 21.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after that, my dad remarried. He married a woman who was maybe 5 or 6 years older than I. Yeah, my dad is about 6 years older than I. And so that caused an enormous kind of split in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, we all moved out the house. And out the family house, and we were able to live with my aunt, my daddy's sister.
Mm-hmm.
And so we lived there for about 3 years on and off until we were able to get our own places. Throughout the whole, my journey in life is that family was always first. My mother instilled that into us, and her father as well, and that we could survive if we were all together. So when I got out of the house, that meant all of my sisters and brother got out, and they all came to my aunt's house, which was like a heavy burden, but my aunt just decided that she could do it for a short period.
Mm-hmm.
And she also put my daddy under child support.
Mm-hmm.
So that was helping her as well as us.
Okay. Can I ask, I know you said that your mom moved to New Orleans and she was here. Was she living here by herself?
No.
And how was she?
The oldest one was married.
Okay.
And so she took my mother in.
Okay.
Until she got married. Mm-hmm. And then when my mother's younger sisters wanted to get out on their own, they always came to the sister, I guess, that preceded them, if
okay.
it was possible. And they stayed for a minute, and then they got out on their own, or they got married.
Okay.
So that was like the tradition.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I was just curious.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, at the point that you're living in your aunt's house, y'all are, you're how old at this point?
I am 22.
Okay.
Because I've completed college, been a savior.
Okay.
Working. Got my first job as a teacher. And my sister, who was next to me, she was away at college, so she wasn't there as often. She was in Southern and Baton Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
So my main task was to be sure that she got finished.
Right.
So I was the one sending her money to, you know, get things that, because there was no student loan or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
She was working part-time, and then I would send her what I could to buy her clothes and food and things
mm-hmm.
of that nature. And then the others were in high school, and my two younger sisters were still in elementary school. But they one was close to getting into high school, and then ultimately while we were at my aunt's, we all were in high school. I was working.
Mm-hmm.
The others were in high school, or they had gotten a job, and so they were on their way out of my
mm-hmm.
aunt's house.
Okay. Well, tell me a little about your childhood home, like what you remember about it, and what was the neighborhood like?
The neighborhood was safe. It was fun. It wasn't a rich neighborhood, but there was a lot of, we all felt like family.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my mother, she would tell us that we could go to the grocery for our neighbors when we couldn't take any money. And it was the funniest thing because one of the neighbors, all she would give us is like 2 or 3 pennies to go across Cleveland Avenue, which was dangerous, but because I guess she thought I was 13, you know, I could negotiate the cars and whatever. Mm-hmm. And when I come back and she offered me those 3 pennies, I would say, Lord, have mercy, I almost died trying to grab that for 3 pennies. But fortunately, I didn't take it. Mm-hmm. Because if you did, they told, and you know, it wasn't like telling on you, but it was like people just talked. And one of the things I remember I got punished for is because my next door neighbor, Miss Christian, she was so nosy. And whenever I go out, whenever I would go outside to walk or play, I always had my sisters and brother. And so it was like the musketeers walking down the street. Well, mm-hmm. if I had a boy, you know, a boy who was interested in me and I was interested in him, then the boy had to walk along with all of us to the snowball stand. And Miss Christian saw me walking down the street with one of the boys. I don't know, it was really platonic. It wasn't anything like love, just that, you know, friends. So she told my mom and dad that I was walking down the street with this guy. And she said, I said, well, who is this? So I said, it's Eugene down the street. And so my mother said, oh, well, that, you know, I know Eugene, that's not a problem, because he would go to church, and he was a very nice person.
Mm-hmm.
But then I stopped talking to Miss Christian, because I said she was too nosy. So Miss Christian told my mother that I wasn't speaking to her. And my mm-hmm. mother and daddy, oh my gosh, you thought I ran away with somebody. They couldn't get over it. You know, you don't pass up people. People are valuable. You know, when you say good morning, you mm-hmm. can say good morning to a cat or a dog. You know, why can't you say good morning to your neighbor? So I kind of rolled my eyes and I just acquiesced to what they were saying, because in my heart of hearts I knew that was probably one of the values that they had in the country, so I kind of had to conform to that.
Right.
But the neighborhood was always friendly, always welcoming, and as 6 children on the block, my mother, they didn't have a lot of money. So people were always giving us stuff, like mm-hmm. one lady worked in the cafeteria, so she'd bring us the leftover food. And if we needed some clothes, they would give us some leftover clothes, because we had teachers in our block, we had pharmacists. Mm-hmm. We had people who had some means, and so if they saw that there was a need, then they gave.
Mm-hmm.
And we just thought that was how everybody subsisted, you know, there was no, we weren't poor, I didn't look at ourselves, we didn't look at ourselves as being poor. But that we were just a community.
Right.
And so you didn't feel like you were less than.
Right.
Because people, they loved you. They did the best that they could. We all played together. We have our spats, but we never had, I have never had a fight. Mm-hmm. I tell people that even today, I've never, ever had a fight. I don't know what a fight is.
Right.
But I imagine that because we all traveled together, all of us, that we're more or less a gang in a way, because I even hear my pastor now at St. Catherine Drexel, because we almost all worship there together. And he called me in one of his sermons, he called us the Fields Gang. And I had kind of never looked at it like that, but I said, well, maybe that's why we never had a fight, because when people saw one, they saw everybody. So
right.
that was the kind of, and then we took on others, like, people who saw us wanted us to take their children to school. We walked to school, so I pick up Sally Ann and her sister. Then mm-hmm. I walk her a little further, I pick up Nancy and her sister mm-hmm. and her brother. Then walk a little further, we pick up Claudia and her sister. So by the time we got to school, it was like 12 of us.
Right.
So it was like, you know, I guess anybody who thought they might want to start something kind of thought, oh, maybe that's not the people. Yeah,
right.
Not the one.
Yeah.
So we just got along.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to say it was a utopia, but it was some place where you felt safe and you felt loved. I hated to leave that neighborhood. When I made 18, we decided, my dad and mother purchased a house for us in Punta Train Park.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice, but we hated to leave it because it was like home, and it was, Punta Train Park was unfamiliar.
Yeah.
And so we grew to love it, but it was like a loss that we had.
Mm-hmm.
We moved there in 59. And I was just finishing high school. I just finished high school, and we moved to Pontchartrain Park. Fortunately, I found some people who were in the same situation that I was. I met my best friend. She was going to Xavier, and I was about to go to Xavier. So we got, she was a year older than I, so mm-hmm. we got that bond of friendship. And so that made the move easier.
Right.
Because we found people who were in pretty much the same situations, that they left their old neighborhoods, that they really were fond of. Mm-hmm. And then they had to make new friends and new bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mother died in 62. And so that made us have to find another place because, like I said, home wasn't our house anymore. We had to move out. My daddy moved in, his wife and her two children.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't an easy fit. So ultimately, I left. And then when I left, the others left.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And do you remember, I know you said y'all all went to private school.
Until my mother's death.
Right. Do you remember liking school?
Oh, we loved school. All of us. We valued education, mainly because our parents did. My daddy and mother both finished like 8th grade.
Mm-hmm.
But out of necessity, they went to work because it was a rural community that they were in. And so my mother went to she worked in a shrimp factory. And I guess my daddy must have been doing gardening out there because that's listed on his on the census that I found that he was a gardener.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they wanted us to have the best education. Plus, in hindsight, I kind of think that they wanted a buffer for segregation because we were not segregated in Catholic schools as much as students were in public schools.
Okay.
Because our church was a church, it's a Catholic church that we did all of our major events in, but we never had the memory of sitting in back of a church or being discriminated in church. And so our schools were our schools. Our books were new books. Mm-hmm. We didn't get secondhand books. And then we had people who cared about us. You know, the nuns didn't care about us. So you didn't have to feel the brunt of your color making a difference or anything like that. You mm-hmm. just, you know, you went to school and just studied.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And so were you at Xavier at a time when there was any protesting or anything happening?
The biggest thing that was, when I was at Xavier, the biggest thing was that they just banned sororities and fraternities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was because there were some stipulations, although subtle, I think they were like color, mm-hmm. like light skin against dark skin,
right.
That kind of thing. So I think that's when they banned sororities and fraternities because of that. So that's the only thing I remember. There were neighborhood things that were going on right after I finished, like there were community sit-ins and things of that sort. But I didn't participate because my personal life was in upheaval,
mm-hmm.
and I was trying to keep my sisters and brothers functioning, so I really didn't take time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
My sister did because she was like away in Southern Baton Rouge, so she was in another climate.
Mm-hmm.
And so she could do some of the stuff.
Yeah.
So no, I never personally did it.
Mm-hmm.
But we used to have fun on the streetcars because we take the signs off the colored signs and throw them out the window. We would catch the bus at our bus stop. We'd go to where the white people were because they expected all the prep students to get on at Magazine and DuFawcett. But then we'd walk up where there were some other whites, more whites, because we were all black. And so we get on the bus and we take all the seats.
Mm.
So when they all got on, you know, we had to sign, we up to the front.
Mm.
So we could take the majority of the bus.
Right.
And that was about as much as we could do. All
right. And what did you study when you were at Xavier? What did you go there?
Elementary education.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always wanted to be a teacher. As a matter of fact, I used to tutor kids on the block when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
I was patterning myself after Miss Shirley Green. Shirley was a teacher, her brother was a vocalist. I guess he must have been a music teacher. mm-hmm. and they all conducted themselves a certain way. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I patterned myself after. I wanted to be Shirley Green. She was just impeccably dressed. She looked like she knew a lot, and yet she related to people. You know, mm-hmm. her mother was the one who would always bring us food from, she was the cafeteria manager, mm-hmm. and so she'd bring us food from the school where she was managing the cafeteria. So, and if we needed anything, you know, socks or whatever, Shirley would get it, her brother would get what we needed. Mm-hmm. You know, not that they felt sorry, but because they saw the need, and they mm-hmm. did.
Okay. And then, so, you finished school?
Yes.
Okay.
And I've gone to, oddly enough, I've gone to Catholic schools all the way through college, and my master's was, my master's is from a Catholic college in Dubuque, Iowa.
Oh, wow.
So I've had Catholic education from, I would say, since from second grade on through postgraduate.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now I did some other graduate studies at UNO, mm-hmm. and then I went to the University of San Diego for a some teaching as a master teacher. I had four interns, and so we all went through some specific training together, a 3-week course in San Diego. Mm-hmm. But yeah. And I have 30 plus hours of graduate work beyond the master's. I've also attended the Institute for Black Catholics at Xavier. I have a certification there as a catechist. And I was 3/4 of the way finished the master's with theology, but Katrina came. And I lost my thesis, my pre-thesis work mm-hmm. in that ordeal because it was on a computer, and the computer was slow. Was compromised, so I never went back.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right. So when and how did you meet your husband?
Oh, it was funny. I made up my mind. I was going to graduate school, mm-hmm. and I wanted to do reading. I wanted to be a specialist, a reading specialist. And my good girlfriend and I, every Friday night we went out. We had fun, like Friday, Saturday. And then we come in early Saturday so we can go to church Sunday, and then go to church, and we go out after church. And then Monday we're back at work.
Right.
So I haven't made up my mind to go to graduate school. I said, well, Nancy, we're just gonna have as much fun as we can. So we did. And she had met a guy who was on Saints team, Bruce. And I wasn't really looking for anybody because, as I said, I had gotten accepted to graduate school as a fellow, mm-hmm. and at Dubuque, Iowa, and at Michigan, I think it was Michigan State. Mm-hmm. And this guy who was in Masons, Masons was the lounge at that time, and oh my gosh, we had the best fun. I don't know what we're laughing at, probably just laughing because we thought we were cute. And in walks this guy, he and his friend, and they started talking to us, and we never went home with anybody. I really got to tell young people that we had the best fun in the world, but we never went home with anybody. You know, they didn't go, we didn't go home with them, and they couldn't come home with us, because I was living with my aunt at that point. Mm-hmm. And so I said, when he came up and he approached me, and he wanted to buy me a drink, he wanted to buy all of us a drink. But Nancy, I don't know why she wasn't drinking, or she had a drink or whatever. Maybe he did. Well, anyway, he bought the drinks, and his friend, who was with him, could not engage Nancy because she had just met this guy. So she told him she was already, you know, involved with somebody, and she wasn't interested. Mm-hmm. So he sat down, and we started talking. And he was so, I thought he was handsome. And then, but he was thoroughly engaging, you know, he was like, he wanted to find out about me, who I was, and, you know, what I did, and how my family was, you know, do you have any brothers and sisters, and that type of stuff. So I kind of like that approach, because lots of men would ask you, are you working? Do you have a job? Well, he didn't go there. He just kind of wanted to know who I was. Mm-hmm. And so I gave him my number and we started talking. And in the meantime, my sister and I moved out of my aunt's house because we got our own apartment together, because by that time my sister got, she had graduated, and so we got together in our apartment. Mm-hmm. And so it was near Christmas then. I decided that we were going to have a Christmas party at our new house. And so I bought this big gallon of, not Jack Daniels, but whatever it is, but anyway, it was a scotch. And I didn't know that when you had a party all day long that you didn't drink with everybody who came through the door. So we would come after church, I took a drink. Then another group of people came, took another drink. So around 5 o'clock, my head was like spinning. It was like, I was just completely out of it. I was throwing up, I was doing all kinds of stuff. So I got on the bed. So later on, he came. So my sister went to the door, she said, your girl is out. She can't come to the door and you can't come in. So I said, oh, well, that's the end of that. But then he came the next day. And he said, you know, inquired was I better and blah, blah, blah. So he took a good, you know, good interest. And I really didn't want to see him because I was kind of embarrassed because I've never been that drunk and still will never, ever be that drunk again. So he was a country boy. So he would go to the country. I guess they were raising watermelons and fruits and stuff like that. So every time he came, he had a big basket of fruit, like, and veggies and stuff like that. He said, now, once you get better, you know, eat the right foods and do the right thing. So then that kind of got to me and I liked it. So I just told him, I said, now look, I can't entertain any notions of getting married or going steady with anybody because I'm going to graduate school. I met him in May.
Right.
And I told him, I said, in August, I'm out of here because I'd already signed the papers and everything to go away. So then he said, well, we can still make it work. I said, all right. I said, what's your proposition? So he said, well, let's get engaged. So we got engaged. And we got married before I left to go to graduate school.
Oh, wow.
Three months. May, June, July, August. 3 months. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I got married. Right before I left, the week before I was to leave for graduate school, we got married.
Okay. Did he go with you?
He stayed here.
Okay.
Because he had his own house.
Okay.
His own. He calls it an apartment, but it was half of a single. Okay. Of a double rug. All right.
Mm-hmm. And so you spent the first year of your marriage apart?
Apart.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I came home every month. Because I said it was a fellowship, so I got sabbatical leave and I got fellowship pay. Mm-hmm. So I had sufficient funds. Of course, I was also taking care of my younger siblings as well. But I was able to come home every month.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So we made it work.
All right. Mm-hmm. And when did kids come along?
My kids came along. I was married in 69. No, 68. I was in school from 68 to 69. And my first baby was born in 70. Jeffrey was born in 70.
Okay.
And then Jay Michael was born in 75.
All right. Okay. And so you stayed in school while?
I finished.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, he came up for my graduation.
Okay.
He was there when I did my presentation for my master's. Mm-hmm. I presented the thesis and conclusions and all other stuff that we had to do. So he was there.
Okay.
And he was there when I marched. Mm-hmm. And initially I wanted to because we had brothers in Chicago, and I really, really wanted to go to Chicago and stay. We stopped to visit his mm-hmm. brother. His brother was nice, but not as, he was kind of distant. I later mm-hmm. understood why, because they were born close together, and they'd always been rivals.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of liked Chicago. I had mm-hmm. some friends who had graduated with me as from Xavier, who was in Chicago, so I felt I could make it there. But he was adamant he didn't want to stay, so I just came back.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then what was he doing at the time?
He was a plumber's assistant. He wasn't a plumber, but he worked for, what is the name of the company he worked for? So he was a plumber assistant. He never could get his license. I don't know if it was part, I knew it was some segregation. that they weren't granting licenses to blacks, so you had to work off of somebody else's, a white man's license. And then eventually I got kind of, he got kind of settled. He settled into what he was doing. And then he got a good job at Avondale as a welder. And that was making good money.
Yeah.
But then in the process, I learned that he was an alcoholic. He didn't drink too much alcohol. Mm-hmm. And maybe that was the reason why he wasn't going to the top of where I thought he could go.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I said it. I found it out when my brother came. We were moving into our present house, the house I still live in. Mm-hmm. And my brother found all these little vodka bottles hidden in the bushes, hidden in the cupboard that was up high.
Mm-hmm.
And he was moving. My brother said, "What are all these bottles? What's this stuff?"
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Somebody's drinking a lot." I said, "Well, it's not me." And so when we thought about it, and had to drop us because I had no children. I didn't have any visitors or anything like that.
Right.
And so that was the demise of our marriage. Not right then, but I would say removed. Jeffrey had been born in 70, and we moved in 73.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine that had been going on for a while.
Right.
Because I wasn't here, so I couldn't really know. And then we moved in our own house. You know, I confronted him and told him that he had to stop. And I think he did stop somewhat because he had some health issues that were associated with drinking. And so I think that stopped him for a minute. And he got really scared because it was affecting his blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And he was having episodes because he had blood pressure that would spike like that. It would go up. And then one day somebody called me to tell me he had passed out on Carrollton and right at the Shell station across from Xavier, but it wasn't Shell at that time. I think it was Exxon.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to go and get him from that spot because they didn't know, you know, what to do.
Mm.
So I needed, because he was a veteran, I immediately got him into veterans. And I think that kind of scared him for a minute.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But that episode was just like the straw that broke the camel's back. So I told him that I was going to have to divorce him.
Right.
I didn't want to raise my kids, but with that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was around 75 because J. Michael was just born. J. was born in November. And I think I started divorce proceedings probably when J. was about maybe two years old.
Okay. All right. And was that a decision you felt supported in by your siblings and your family?
Yeah, I did, because they didn't really, really like it. Mm-hmm. You know, sisters are funny. They don't like, I've just witnessed that because the other sister got married about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
But siblings who are close don't really like anything to open up the, affect the relationship. So they didn't, all of them didn't like it. Some did, some didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So they were happy. I tell you who did support it. My dad, who I was estranged from, I told him, I just called him out of desperation and said to him that I need to come home because I have these two children. And I said, "Daddy, you have to make room for me." I said, "Because I can't do the household and do everything else and raise my children."
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, they were in parochial school. So I said, he said, "Well, no problem." So when I got home, because he was still married,
mm-hmm.
when I got home, he had put his wife up. And so we automatically moved in.
Okay.
And as I said, we made it work. And I thought, their marriage was already kind of shaky because I guess she was so much younger than he. They weren't really compatible,
right,
if you think about it. Because he was well into his... I was about maybe 20, maybe when he got married, I was 22 or 23. And by the time I got unmarried, she must have been about maybe, I would say she was probably early 30s.
Mm.
And I was probably mid, a little later 20s.
Mm.
And so it really didn't work, and so she was gone. Oddly enough, we're good friends now.
Hmm.
She lives in Pensacola, and she comes here to visit me, and I do the same. I visit her.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, how long did you stay with your dad before then being able to set up your own home?
Okay. Well, I had my own home.
Okay.
And I had the house. My husband had bought, we had bought this house.
Right.
But I thought maybe he would keep it.
Mm.
And I would say we were apart, we were divorced 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I decided, because there was another guy who wanted me to marry him, and he was young, he was older,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't see that. So I decided that I would go back and resume housekeeping in my own home.
Mm-hmm.
And oddly enough, my husband and I remarried.
Okay.
In 85, we remarried.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked. It was better. He was older and wiser, and so was I. And he helped me to raise the kids at the latter part of their like teenage year. Jeffrey was about 18 and Jay was 13.
Mm-hmm.
So he was there for those little critical pieces, especially for Jeffrey.
Mm-hmm.
And the onset of Jay's. But Jay took his death more, it was more deeply, he was more deeply affected than Jeffrey, because of course Jeffrey was at the end. And he was in college. Jay was just starting 8th grade, and that was kind of crucial for him. And so we did go to counseling to see
mm-hmm.
what we could do to get him in a better place, and it did. So that's it. And he died. My husband died in 89.
And since then, any grandkids, or has the family grown and expanded?
Yes. My prayers have been answered. My mother never saw any of her grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And so my daddy got to see my sister's son, who is older than mine. She got to see 1, 2, 3, 4 of the grandchildren. Got
mm-hmm.
to see. He didn't get to see Olivia, who's with me today. And Jay, my youngest son, he didn't get to see his 3 kids.
Mm-hmm.
But I have 6 grandchildren, 4 kids, 4 grandkids,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just thrilled.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you mentioned traveling a little bit within the United States, but have you done any traveling abroad?
Oh yeah, last year I was in Paris, my son feeded me. And my granddaughter, we were in Paris for 10 days.
Nice.
I've done Ghana about maybe 15 years ago. I went with a church group to Ghana. We stayed about 2 weeks there.
Mm-hmm.
Alaska, Rio de Janeiro, Hawaii, I think those are the outside places. But, yeah.
Okay. What was Ghana like?
Ghana was lovely. I enjoyed it. It's contrary to what people think. You know, I heard so many rumors about, oh, Africans don't like black people because, you know, I couldn't get into it. But they're not going to welcome you. They're not going to, you know, really think highly of you because they don't think much of American blacks. And when we got there, we got the best welcome. People were just warm and friendly. They called me Mama.
Nice.
And I thought that was a high compliment because I don't call everybody Mama, but the people I do call Mama are people that are near and dear.
Mm-hmm.
We got to see the wall where the high cliff where the slaves were put on ships and I forget what they call it, the wall of no return or the hall of no return. Well, anyway, it was probably the most sacred place I've ever visited.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can still feel the spirit of the ancestors who were dragged from the continent and went unwillingly to these slave ships.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like very moving to all of us. As a matter of fact, many of us cried.
Mm-hmm.
We found people who were very much like us.
Mm-hmm.
That some of their customs are just like ours. They cook their greens, they cook their veggies like we do. They love candy yams, they love the greens, fish.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised to see men on the corner. I said, oh, this is what it's like. They all on the corner like I want men. But the men seemed to congregate like our men do on the corner and mm-hmm. kind of talk. I guess they're solving the world's problems from their perspective.
Right.
I like that. The women were very independent mm-hmm. and very, to me, they were strong black women.
Mm-hmm.
They were not as engaging in many instances as the men, but I think they're socialized to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
More or less kind of like in the background, not so much. I don't know how it is now, but this is about maybe 15 years ago, 10 mm-hmm. to 15 years ago. But they were resourceful.
Mm-hmm.
I saw them making do with little. Because we went to Accra, which is the capital of Ghana, but we also went through another little town called Sisseri. And the children were schooled in a one-room house with a dirt floor,
mm-hmm.
but you've never seen children so disciplined.
Hmm.
Teacher came out to talk to us, and I kind of looked to see if the kids, they were thoroughly engaged in whatever the teacher told them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a positive. As a matter of fact, I'm going back. Mm. I'm going back. That's one of my to-do lists.
Nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I loved it.
Mm. Well, I think the question I have is really more geographic and just more specifically, what areas of the city had you lived in, and which areas have you taught in?
Okay, well, because of Katrina, I was moved from New Orleans to Maryland. My oldest son lives in Silver Spring and had just moved to Silver Spring in, like, I would say June or July 2005, because he got a promotion. He was in fair housing here, and then he got to do national fair housing in Silver Spring. And then my girlfriend, well, that's another story, but she lives in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And so her parents, she has a house midway the block, and her parents have a big house midway the, on the other end of the block. And so they wouldn't rest until we got there.
Mm-hmm.
And my son didn't have housing for us immediately, but Vanessa, because she had access to two houses, we got to stay, part of us stayed in her house and another part, because there were seven of us that journeyed from New Orleans to Maryland. And she was at that time Director of Human Resources in around the county in Baltimore, in Maryland. Anne Arundel is kind of like, I would say maybe 45 minutes from Baltimore. And so being in personnel, she asked me, I got there like maybe a Thursday, and she asked me Friday that I want to work. And I'm saying, no. I'm a victim. I just came from
right.
Katrina. I don't want to work. Plus, when I retired in 98, and so this was 2005. Although I had been doing some consulting and some other work, I wasn't ready to work. She said, you can get a reading job. I can get you in Monday. I said, Vanessa. So she mentioned the pay. I said, okay.
Right.
So I taught in Anne Arundel County for 4 years as a reading specialist at two elementary schools, Jessup Elementary and Van Bocklin Elementary. So that's where I taught there. I don't think I taught anyplace else, but I've taught in almost at every level here in the city, because as a reading specialist, you can go as low as first grade
mm-hmm.
and you can go up to college. So I've done that range of teaching. I did an adjunct professor at Xavier Diller and SUNO. And then as a teacher advocate, I was teaching teachers how to teach from, I would say, elementary, middle school, and college, and high school, senior high.
Mm-hmm.
Working with students at both Xavier and Xavier Diller and Southern. One was in academics, so one of the methods courses. And then at Diller, I was teaching remedial reading.
Mm-hmm.
So my experiences with kids from almost from birth to college, through mm-hmm. college.
And when did y'all get an opportunity to move back after Katrina?
I moved back in 2005 to 2010. I moved back at the close of the school year
mm-hmm.
of 2010.
Okay.
and then I didn't have the money to rebuild because I bought a condo in Silver Spring. And the market, the housing market went upside down, so I wasn't able to recapture the money that I put into the condo. I sold it at a loss. So when I came back, I had maybe like $10,000. And I also had a $30,000 voucher to say that I could elevate my house, but $10,000 wasn't enough to renovate it. Mm-hmm. So lo and behold, my neighbor who didn't leave, she stayed here. She told me about a grant called a blighted area grant. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to get $95,000 and I was able to put the house back together and yes. elevate it.
Okay. All right. And that was the house that you lived in pre-Katrina mm-hmm. with your husband?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I've lived there since 73.
Okay. Great. What area of the city is that?
Carrollton, about Bochum. Lot from Costco's.
Okay. Well, I think that's all I need right now. Mm-hmm. If I think of anything else, I will let you know.
Okay.
And then the only other things I've been asking have been more specific to Wisdom of the Elders and say just a little bit about what made you want to take the class.
Okay. Family. As I said, family is a real big value for me, and my family, because we have family reunions almost like every five years. Mm-hmm. And we did some research, but it was like very primary. Like, you know, I know that my grandfather was, and he came to marry my mother from the plantation, Alliance Plantation. I know that they came through North or South Carolina. That's where they entered America through that area and came south. But I didn't know any of the particulars. So when I thought about the Wisdom of the Elders, you know, I wanted to speak to that part of me that I always was curious about. Mm-hmm. And it really has been an important resource for that. And then I want to pass that legacy on to my daughter, my granddaughter, and my grandchildren. Mm-hmm. The genesis for that was when I was in graduate school, I lived with a white family. She was German. Her name was German. And I would look at her family tree, and I would look at it and I said, oh, well, I don't even have that. I don't know that, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it was always in the back of my mind, how do I get to this? You know, what do I need to do it? Mm-hmm. And so Wisdom of the Elders came just at that time, and I really wanted to make it real.
Okay.
Not just the thought.
Great. Well, would you want to participate in another semester if we end up doing it again?
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
Was there anything that you didn't enjoy?
Lunches could have been. I didn't like, this is petty, but the lunches, I don't like stuff on, I like just a plain sandwich. I like the pita bread, mm-hmm. but I don't like the, whatever that sauce is they put in it.
Okay.
I don't like the sauce. I just like the lettuce and the meat and nothing else.
Okay.
I love the water. I love everything else that's associated with it. But and I love the fact that we do get lunch. Mm-hmm. But that's about the only thing I would change.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And if we can get to the main library, because I think I'm not as familiar with those resources as I need to be. I find that if I want to go back any further, I need to be able to access records like Mr. Waters.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not familiar with that yet.
Right.
I know we got exposed to it.
Right.
But if we can get to that, just to be able to know how to access that information from death certificates and those other, what you call it, primary resources, I would like to do that.
Okay. And I mean, I guess this is the variation of the question I already asked, but is there anything that we could do better next time?
I think, first of all, your personality is such that you let us feel comfortable. Those that can write well and those that can't do it very well, there's support there for people that need help. You know, I like the fact, there was one little guy I didn't really get a lot from, I don't know his name, but I'd maybe look at that, scrutinize your health a little better because he was like, you know, I had to ask him, are you sleepy? Are you, what's wrong with it? You know, I had to really ask him because he didn't seem to be into it.
Right.
Now the other little lady from La Place, she's excellent. So maybe look at your support personnel a little better. It has opened up the library more in my eyes, because I didn't realize how much the library changed. You know, I had the idea of the stacks when I was at Xavier, we had the stacks, and then we had the microfiche and film. And so, you know, it's even, it's that and this,
right.
You know, so that makes it more of a up-to-date, relevant resource. I like the pace. And you know, because everybody can proceed at their own pace, you know. I like the guidance. I like the field trips, the field trips that we had. I think that's about it. I like everything that we did. We got, you know, we got enough to support us, and yet we could move on into other areas if we felt so called to do so.
Okay.
That's about it.
Well, if you think